Today on the Travel Guys.
Today on the Travel Guys, what would you do if you found $10,000 in cash in the Las Vegas airport? We'll tell you all about it.
Well, he's an airline pilot. He's a jump seat world traveler. He's Henry Bernacki, and he's our special guest in studio today.
He's joining us live in studio to discuss everything from Mother Teresa and world traveling to planes that disappear in the night.
And 30 restaurants, 3-course meals for only $30. It's Sacramento Dine Around Town, and we're going to be talking about it.
All that and more today on the Travel Guys.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. I'm a traveling man and hate the road.
Hit the road, Jack.
Riding on the city of New Orleans.
Kicks out on Route 66.
That's entertainment.
Let's go on with the show.
And the show is on, ladies and gentlemen, live and direct from Studio A here at the, the FM News Talk 92.5 and AM 1530 KFBK.
Boy, that's a mouthful.
Complex it is.
And sometimes people even get it outright, unlike me on the promo.
That's Mark Hoffman from Sports Leisure Vacations. I'm Tom Romano, and it's so glad to have you listening today. Got a great show. We're going to inspire you. You know, if there's some young people out there listening, you know what? We might turn you into an airline pilot after you hear what Henry has to say and why he became a pilot. Mark, if Mark knew now, if he knew then what he knows now, I think you might have become an airline
pilot. I might have been a pilot instead of a tour operator.
So that you could get those jump seats.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Our jump seat explorer is live in the studio with us. And then we're going to tell you about how you can get a great deal on a meal in Sacramento this month. And all that before we go away at 3 o'clock.
All righty. Brandon's here. He's at the controls. He's going to bring on the Mark Hoffman trio.
It's very amazing how we get these guys into the studio every week at exactly the right time.
It's crazy. And Mark's going to bring us up to date on what the world's going on.
All right, in the travel news today, gray whales are arriving early in record numbers. Not only is the weather messed up on land, it might be messed up off the shore, too. Gray whales have shown up so early, their migration through Southern California waters is showing them in record numbers. Last week, in one day at Rancho Palos Verdes, they logged a record 163 sightings in December, more than they have seen at that point in 28 years.
Do you have a trip to Whale Watch?
From time to time. I find whale watching is kind of an interesting thing. It sounds good to people when they think about it, but then when they get out in the water and they're moving around a lot and the whales are, you know, maybe not there or not too abundant, why it doesn't seem like. It's one of those things that seems like a lot better idea sometimes in practicality than in reality. Expedia.com says that they are verifying their hotel rankings. New strategy, Expedia, which spun off TripAdvisor from their company, now says that they are taking steps to make sure that hotel reviews are accurate. If you go to Expedia.com and click on a hotel review, Expedia claims that they will be unfiltered. We'll see. Actually, Tom, I did go and check out some Sacramento hotels today just to kind of see, and indeed, they looked like they had left the good up with the bad.
Good.
So we'll find out. We've talked many times on this program about whether hotel ratings are reliable or not, and which ones are reliable and which ones are not. So it looks like Expedia is making an effort to bring some legitimacy to that area. We spoke in the headlines about the man who found $10,000 in cash at the Las Vegas airport and returned it to his owner. This is really an interesting story, Tom. This guy lives in Colorado. He's going through security. Mm-hmm. He sees these two envelopes. He doesn't open them. He kind of guesses they might have cash in them. So he stays there for 30 minutes and he waits for somebody to come back through security or somebody to notice that they're missing the envelopes. Nothing happens. So he takes the money with him. He goes all the way home to Colorado without the intention of keeping it, he says.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Opens it up, finds out it's money, calls the Las Vegas airport, tells him he's found the cash, but they tell him that they can't, their policy is that they can't take unclaimed cash, so the man will just keeps calling back every day to see if anybody has put in a claim for this money. And eventually a man from El Paso says that, you know, he left the money and he's able to describe it and they get it back to him. And it's an amazing story. The way the news media finds out about it is the guy goes into his bank to transfer the money into the man's account. and to get it to the, where it's supposed to go. The bank teller hears the story. She tells somebody else who tells somebody else who probably eventually tells somebody in the news media. And
that's
anyways,
a pretty crazy story.
He did get a $1,000 reward for his efforts, and he said he didn't even feel good about keeping that. So there you go, a good Samaritan for you. A woman gave birth on a China Eastern Airlines flight overnight. Indeed. The flight attendant set up, cleared two rows in the back. We'll have to ask Henry about this.
Absolutely.
If an airline, I mean, I know that, you know, airline ship captains can marry people.
Yes.
Can airline pilots?
I'm sure they can.
I'm sure they probably can. Listen, did you know, Tom, have you ever gone through security and you've got a few pennies or a little bit of change in your pocket? You get to the other side of the security, and or you get a security bin, and it's already got a few little pennies in it or something like that. Did you know last year people left a little bit short of $400,000 in loose change in TSA bins? And so now a legislator has introduced a bill to, the money just goes back to TSA. I mean, they don't really have any way to dispose of it. So a lawmaker has introduced a piece of legislation that would give the money to the USO.
That's a great idea.
Isn't that a terrific idea? I mean, really and truly, it's just all $400,000.
I would have never guessed.
Yeah.
I know. I take the change out of my pocket, throw it on the counter, and you know, every so many months or twice a year, you know, it can add up to a couple of $100s.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you imagine?
Yep, 376,000 2 years ago and 399,000 last year. Okay, here's a unique thing. If you've bought tickets to the Olympic Games in London, starting on Monday, you can return your unwanted tickets. If you have tickets that you don't want, you can return them and get a refund for them. In fact, the London people have been so good about it, they figured out that there had been a computer glitch and 10,000 people had been sold tickets to synchronized swimming to an event that didn't on a day when it didn't happen. So they went back to all of those people and offered them premium seats for other events at no extra cost, just to make sure that folks were well taken care of. Congratulations to the folks in London. And finally, in the travel news, what would the news be without a list?
Here comes the list.
Here comes the list. This is the list, the 10 most popular on-demand theatrical movie titles in hotels last year. Number one, well, let's go from the bottom up. 10 was Life as We Know It. Then we had Hail Pass, No Strings Attached, The Lincoln Lawyer, Just Go With It, Little Fockers, Five Fast, Limitless, The Hangover Part 2, and the number one requested hotel movie of last year.
Drum roll, please.
Bridesmaids.
Well, yeah, I love that movie.
Yeah, I only saw one of the 10, so
I saw a couple of them.
You're not staying in enough hotels, or I'm not paying a premium price. All right, coming up after this short time out, we are joined by world traveler and Virgin Airlines pilot Henry Bernacki. Henry is here to talk about a variety of things today, including how he got to meet Mother Teresa, how he travels around the world with nothing but a backpack, and then we've got a little more serious topic to discuss after the news break at the bottom of the hour about an Air France flight that went awry a couple of years ago.
It's all coming up right here on the Travel and Entertainment Guys on FM News Talk 92.5 and AM 1530 KFBK. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys on FM News Talk 92.5 and AM 1530 KFBK. Mark Hoffman directly across from me. Immediately to my left, the very handsome Henry Bernacki. Actually, poster child, if you will, billboards and bus displays and so forth.
I'm surprised Henry isn't just a corporate entity.
Almost, Virgin America Airlines. What was that like, Henry? Like over at the SFO or I think, well, maybe New York and other cities, seeing yourself standing there in front of an airliner on a billboard.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me come back. It's always a pleasure to see you gentlemen, after the holidays especially.
Thank you.
But you're too kind, honestly. It was, but about the billboard, it was something that I was selected for. You had to put in, you had to try out for, you had to do a whole interview for it as well.
Okay.
But when it's actually surreal. You see yourself as you're driving up in different parts of the country and you see this billboard. My buddy said it looks like you, Henry. And I was like, oh, I just never told him. And then A couple months later, I was like, yeah, that's actually me. And they were like, no, that guy's too big.
Well, I think you had the glasses on. And,
yes.
And so you'll know, for those of you that haven't had a chance to go to the website and see a picture of Henry, Henry has the clean-shaven head look, which works well for you and would not work well for Mark or I can guarantee you that.
I have those speed bumps, that's why.
Look, before we move any further, Mark, why don't you go ahead and give people a little bit of a background, a little update on Henry so that they know who we're talking to and why.
Henry has joined us before. He is a pilot for Virgin America Airlines, which is the U.S. equivalent of Virgin Atlantic. And Henry is a man who has done something that I think that probably a lot of the people who are listening to the radio right now wish that they could do. A lot of us, when we were in our late teens, early 20s, maybe had the opportunity to take a year off and see the world, or maybe you were an exchange student for a year or something like that. Some of us did not. And whether you did or you didn't, you probably have a yearning to do it the first time or do it again. And Henry has basically figured out a way to spend his life doing what a lot of us wish we could do. And he did it in a backwards way. Most people would get a job and start earning money, and then they would say, gee, you know, here's what I like to do, and here's how I'm going to do it. Henry did it a little bit. Henry, you figured out a way to do it in reverse. You started seeing the world, then decided that you liked seeing it, and
then what?
So tell us the story, would you please, that we were sharing.
I went to university for languages, so I studied languages and business politics. International affairs, but it's basically just business politics. And along the way, I was living overseas and studying languages. And I enjoyed it so much, I wanted to continue to do it. But obviously, I had student loans. I had to put myself through school. I had an academic scholarship, but it didn't pay for everything. So I had a lot of student loans I had to pay for. So I started working at the same time. My mom and I started an importing company back in university. And I saved enough money, so I had $3,700 that I would go to travel with. And then the other portion would go for student loans for 1 year.
And tell me how far you got on $3,700 one year, Henry.
All the way around the world. That year, I think I saw 40 countries. It was
so that's less than $100 a country. I'd say that's a pretty good.
Yeah, less than $10 a day or so.
Of course, he didn't get the kind of accommodations that you would go for.
No,
Mark.
But
so
what made you decide that you wanted to be a world traveler? You said you started an import business with your mother.
Yes.
So that now I can see where you're kind of sort of heading. People ask me how I got into the travel business. I told them I used to move Scrabble letters around my room in Tonka trucks.
Yes.
And that might have been a clue that I was somehow going to end up in the transportation industry somehow. But any clues along the way?
No. At 8 years old, I looked at a world map, honestly, and I just wanted to see what that world was about. And then the only reason I started importing with my mother is it was helping pay for loans as I was in school. So I wouldn't have that hanging over me, all of that money. I had $30,000 plus in student loans. So that's the only reason I started doing it. And I felt by living in certain parts of the different parts of the world that, oh, that would suffice. But after university, I was like, well, I have $3,700. I can go travel.
How old were you and where was your first trip?
My first trip was in 17 years old. I took a bus to Mexico alone. Okay.
And when you decided to become a world, you're through college now and you take off, what was your first destination?
England. I flew into England on a one-way ticket into London, and I figured I have $3,700, and I realized right then it wasn't going to last very long if I stayed in guest houses or hotels. So I started sleeping outside. And nobody could see me. I looked appropriate. I always clean-shaved, but every city ends somewhere, so I take the transit, the bus, the subway, somewhere to where the city ended, and I would just sleep out there every night. And once a week, I might get a guest house or youth hostel, but I'd wash my socks in bus stations and train stations.
Now, I understand you met a pilot or you visited with a pilot that gave you the idea, and then you found out what was next.
Yes, I met a pilot, an airline pilot. I started talking to him. We were in Hong Kong. And it was the first flight I took because I traveled by land or sea all the way to Hong Kong through Siberia. And I was going to the Philippines. And so I started talking to this airline captain. And he was like, oh, I was civilian trained. I had no idea what civilian trained meant. I was very naive, ignorant, whatever it was. But he said, yeah, I just went to the school and I learned how to fly. And then I put one step in front of the other. And I just started getting different jobs as airlines around the world. And I got hired by Cathay. And I was like, okay, so you can go be an airline pilot.
Cathay Pacific, Korean airline for our listeners.
And he said, yeah, you can go be a civilian pilot. You can go learn at a school in the United States or wherever around the world and get your ratings that way. He didn't tell me how long it would take, how many, because it's different for everybody, and how much money it would take.
How long did it take?
It that's different for everybody. For me, my private took 6 months, instrument 6 months, commercial single 2 months, commercial multi another 4 months. But that means nothing. And once you have your commercial multi, you're still not going to get hired because you have no experience, because you only have 200, 300 hours. So you have no experience, which is in the U.S., you go out and you teach people how to fly, or you go get a job overseas. So I went to St. Kitts in the West Indies, and I started knocking on doors. And I said, hey, will you hire me? Everybody laughed at me. And one guy was like, you came down here with one shirt, one pair of jeans, and a suitcase of books of flying? He goes, well, let's go flying. So he hired me. He really did. Tony Otley from St. Kitts. Mm-hmm. And I stayed down there 2 years, and I built up about 1,600 hours there flying a Twin Otter, an Aztec and an Islander.
So now you've got this vision of seeing the world. Now you have a way to see the world. And some people don't know that airlines have kind of a mutual arrangement. There's a thing on an airplane called a jump seat.
Yes.
Explain what that is.
In the cockpit, we either have one seat or two seats, and that's for an observer. Initially, it's for the FAA, somebody watching you, how you fly, to make sure you're signed off correctly.
Or to train perhaps a new pilot. Or...
Yes, exactly. That's what it is for. So the FAA will observe a new captain. The company will observe a new pilot and say, okay, he's signed off. That's what it's for. If it's open, if nobody's using it, another airline pilot, which is what we call Part 121 U.S. airline pilot, you can show up at the gate and say, hey, can I get a jump seat? A mutual professional agreement between airlines in the United States that you can go and use this jump seat. And if it's open, you don't have to sit in that cockpit if there's a seat in first, business, or economy.
Right.
If you want to hang out in the cockpit and talk to the guys... Yeah, you have a lot of guys who just come up, there's an immediate rapport, you sit there for 2 hours, you hang out and you visit during the flight. I like to sit in the cockpit because you are learning from somebody and you're watching how they fly the airplane. I like that. That's very good. But some guys don't want you to sit in the cockpit, so you go in the back. And it's the mutual professional agreement between airliners in the United States.
So you get to another country and you get off the airplane and you go. Now at some point you got to India.
Yes. Oh, this is
Calcutta.
Yes, actually, this was long before I was even an airline pilot. Uh-huh. I was in '97 sleeping on the streets that year with $3,700. When I came back, I decided to go to flight school. So I just graduated university, and I had $3,700. I ended up in India, and I found out Mother Teresa was there. And it was in 3 days before she passed away. I talked to a guy from Britain. He goes, "Oh, I was just at Missionaries at Charity yesterday. You should go meet her." And I woke up at 5 a.m. the next day, and I was like, "Ah, I'll go travel around India and come back and meet her then." But I woke up at 5:15. I was like, I better get up in case anything happened to her. And literally, 3 days later, she had passed away.
So you were able to go. And this is not we talked a little bit about this before we went on the air. It wasn't a private audience or anything, but just about anybody could have gone.
Anybody.
And had anybody could have gone and had the opportunity to break bread with this lady. And you had that opportunity. You had no idea of knowing that she wasn't going to be with us that very much longer, which kind of speaks to the do it now.
Exactly. Life happens, again, to those who show up. And it was very normal and natural to be around other nuns because I grew up, I went to Catholic schools, but my godmother's a nun. Or she was. She passed away at 104 years old. Sister Marsh Marie. Yeah. So being around Mother Teresa and Sister Nirmala was just like being around my godmother and the rest of the nuns. And I just showed up, went to Mass. Afterwards, Sister Nirmala said, come back at 10 in the morning if you want to have breakfast with her. And literally, there's probably four other travelers there. And obviously, 3 days later, millions of people showed up. And I sat there and talked to her for 30 minutes. She gave me two medals of the Virgin Mary, blessed me on my forehead. And it literally was like talking to...
What was it like looking into the eyes of Mother Teresa? What did you see?
You could look right into her pupils. She was very intense. Obviously, her body was frail. She was in a wheelchair. But she looked right into my pupils, and she pretty much grabbed me with her eyes. She hugged me, pulled me in, and her intensity, you could really feel. Her body was weak, but her intensity was there with her eyes. They had a spark. And her, I believe, just if I could say it like this, her soul outgrew her body.
Wow.
Good way to put it.
What
I like that line, life happens to those that show up.
To those that show up.
I hope our listeners did too.
Yeah, I don't doubt that a bit. Henry, as you pass the world and as you wander around and see things, give us something else that comes to mind here. We got a couple minutes before the news break of something that you encountered or that was unusual or different or that sticks out in your memory.
Well, my last trip to a country that I would have probably never guessed I'd go to was North Korea. You hear about this country, this isolated country, and I finally...
How did you get into North Korea?
It took a year and a half, but I kept applying. Everybody likes to say no initially.
What was it like?
Isolation. It was literally you're physical isolated, you're mentally isolated, but you're bombarded with their propaganda, which isn't bad. You just have to go with the mentality that, okay, this is really going to happen, and you're going to go at their level. They're going to teach you. You're not there to teach them about your ideologies.
And you didn't? Did you have any opportunity to get outside of their sphere of influence while you were there at all? Or
no.
Everything was very government controlled.
Everything. Three guides. If I went to the bathroom, they came to the bathroom with me.
So probably when you looked at the when you watched the funeral ceremonies and everything that's been going on over there, you look at it from a little different point of view.
I was on those streets.
99.9% of the folks who do. All right, we've got to go to Aaron and get you updated on the news, traffic, and weather at the bottom of the hour. Obviously, a fascinating conversation. When we come back after the news, we're going to talk a little bit about the Air France flight that disappeared into the ocean a couple of years ago. We talked about it last week. We're going to talk to Henry about it and get his professional expertise. I'm Mark Hoffman. He is Tom Romano. We are the Travel Guys. This is FM News Talk 92.5 and AM 1530 KFBK.
We're going places with that sports leisure flair. A world of adventure, and we take you there.
Hey, that's the Sports Leisure Trio once again. Your Sports Leisure Vacations update for today to tell all of our sports leisure travelers. Your next newsletter will be coming out in about 10 days. It'll be online and sent to you by mail. Our two lucky Travel Club listeners for today are Judy Hines and Susan Baring. Judy Hines and Susan Baring, you have until the close of business Tuesday to call the Sports Leisure office at 361-8687 and claim $100 in tour cash just for being a listener of the Travel Guys. Today's lucky staff code word is carrot. And that's your Travel Club update for today. Something's supposed to happen over there, Mr. Romano?
Yeah, I guess I couldn't figure out where my headphones were because there was no sound.
There was no sound, yes.
Welcome back, everyone. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys here on FM News Talk 92.5 and AM 1530 KFBK.
Before we get back into it with Henry, there's something I forgot last week. A very nice lady called me who was planning a trip to the United Kingdom in the springtime and wanted some assistance with it. And mostly what we do is group travel. Mm-hmm. So I know we have lots of travel professionals who listen to this program on a regular basis. And so my request is, if you are a travel planner and you are specialized in the United Kingdom, if you would give us a call at 921-1530 or 1-800-834-1530, we would be happy to take your information and find you a customer.
Wow, it's a hookup. It's the hookup show.
Well, it's a nice lake. Exactly. This lady needs some assistance, and it's not something that I do. So if it's something that you do, 921-1530, and let us know, and I will fix you. I will hook you up with Jeannie. She sounds like a very nice lady.
Outstanding. Well, I have to ask this because we discussed it earlier in the program. Henry Bernacki with us, our Virgin America airline pilot, and we were talking about delivering babies. Have you ever been on a flight where somebody had a baby on your plane?
I never have in the 10 plus years I've been flying.
All right.
What's the most unusual passenger situation that you can think of that has arisen? Somebody, they hit the PA system and said...
Actually, well, first of all, back to the pregnancy, I didn't think you could fly, and obviously China Eastern, if it's going international, they won't let women pass a certain month.
Oh, really?
Yes,
yeah.
Go into air because they don't, where's the baby going to be born at, and what's the passport going to say? So that's a very interesting question.
Wow, wow. Yeah, exactly. So what nationale, I guess the country baby would be Chinese.
Yeah, if it lands in the U.S., though, I don't know. That's...
All right, we need to switch gears here a little bit. Last week we talked about an article put out by a gentleman who wrote in Popular Mechanics. His name was Jeff Wise. Henry, I know you're familiar with the interview. He talked about the Air France flight that disappeared over the ocean a couple of years ago. The black boxes have been brought up from the ocean, and they've been able to listen to the transcript, and they've been able to piece together some of what happened. And this gentleman has added his layer of expertise and his opinions and his thoughts on what he thinks has happened, and we're starting to get a better picture of what all happened that day on the Air France flight. And Henry, we thought we would take advantage of this opportunity. We spent some time talking about the fun part of your job, but to talk about the nuts and bolts part of your job, these guys were flying an airplane over the Atlantic Ocean, and they ran into some trouble. We've got some sound bites from Jeff's interview that we had last week. So if we could play the first one.
Yeah, and for our listeners, basically what we're going to do is we're going to play some snippets from the interview last week in case you missed it. And from listening to it, you will see the story unfold. And along the way, we're going to stop after we unveil part of the story and get Henry's comments. So let's begin with some of the part from the very first portion of the interview that we refer to as the setup. So here's how it all began on that Air France flight.
Clearly, these guys, it was a very routine day, and they weren't too concerned about anything in particular. They weren't looking too closely at the radar. Some other planes that were flying through the area had changed their course to go around the worst of the weather. These guys weren't really paying that much attention. They had the radar set to the wrong setting. It was clear that they were heading right into the worst weather, but they only had a few minutes' notice. Because they weren't feeling completely concerned about what was going on, the most junior of the pilots on the plane happened to be what's called the pilot flying. He was the one who was at the controls, and so he was the one who was responding when, at a few minutes past midnight, they entered a cloud, and ice condensed from the cloud onto what's called the pitot tube, which is a sensor that sticks out from the skin of the aircraft and is used to measure speed. This becomes clogged with ice.
Henry, these guys are up in the air, and suddenly they've got a weather problem. It sounds like that they weren't very prepared for the situation.
Yes, but before all this, I would like to say I'm not second-guessing any captain or airline pilot. Out of professional courtesy, I'd make sure I say that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not NTSB. I'm just an airline captain. And
you, like the man who wrote the article, are offering your opinion.
Yes, an opinion. I just want to say that out of professional courtesy. These obviously, everybody on the airplane had passed away. And I appreciate you asking me to come in to discuss this. Yes, what has happened over the Atlantic or Pacific, you have two or three or four-person cockpit. Right now we have three people, CM1, crew member 1, 2, and 3. So the captain left, the other two came in, one person came in to take the relief pilot, and the captain's now sleeping. So what has happened is the possibility of briefing. You have to brief everybody what is you're doing, where you're at on your latitude and longitude, your speed, your Mach speed, because we're measuring Mach, and your next check-in point, basically called a waypoint, and your compulsory reporting point. And you have your frequency set up on 123.45, and the emergency frequency is 121.5 over the water, because you're not in any kind of radar contact.
So it's possible to be on the wrong radio frequency. That's not completely unheard of.
Crossing the water, you usually put what we call in a transponder, squawk code 2000, 123.45 is one radio, radio 2 is 121.5. We're taught that. Obviously, we're not sure which frequency they were on and what's their radar setting.
All right, let's find out. Now they're up there. They've got this situation. Let's find out a little bit more, and then let's get your comments, Henry.
This is very important, that when they lost the airspeed indication, the computer no longer was able to do its calculations that it needs to do to run the autopilot. And so the autopilot automatically disengaged and made a sound that's audible on the cockpit voice recorder. And so these guys suddenly, having gone from a very casual relax, it's kind of the middle of the night, and all of a sudden they are forced to hand fly the airplane. So here we have, it's the middle of the night, pitch black, turbulent, it's bumpy. These guys had seen a kind of scary phenomenon a few minutes before called St. Elmo's fire. You can imagine they might have been a bit sketched out, as I like to say. They were a little bit nervous, a little bit tense. All of a sudden, they're forced to hand fly the airplane at altitude, which is something that most pilots are not trained to do these days. And this guy, this junior pilot who was at the controls, apparently had never flown a plane by hand at 35,000 feet, which he was now called upon to do in the middle of the night in turbulence.
Henry, when we talked about when you were here over the summer and you were a guest here in the studio, one of the things we talked about is the fact that airlines now, some airlines, are not encouraging pilots to fly the aircraft as often as they used to. They're using autopilot a lot more. And,
yeah.
And it sounds like that might have contributed to this situation.
And I flew overseas for a foreign airline, China Airlines, and they recommended above a certain altitude autopilot on. But again, if you're flying with a captain that is not as strong or doesn't have the confidence in his abilities, he's going to make the people flying use autopilot. So at 35,000 feet, most people are going to use autopilot. But when it clicks off, it's just imagine a runner sprinting, sprinting, sprinting. At some point, you have to stop and gather your wind. The autopilot will only do a certain level. Once it's worked too hard, it's going to click off, and now you have to hand fly, which is not abnormal. I mean, clicking off the autopilot, there's something obviously wrong. But hand flying the airplane we've been hand flying, hopefully, for years and years, so that's not abnormal.
Now, Henry, as I don't know if we're going to have time to play all of these clips, but as the story unfolds and the plane the plane goes up in altitude a little bit and then it basically stalls, it starts towards the ocean, and they talk about the fact that because you're in this cloud formation, it's very difficult to know whether you're going up, down, sideways. Is that?
Yes, and then you have to look at your what we call a primary flight display, PFDs, and there's a blue side and a brown side. Blue side is the sky, mm-hmm. Brown side is the ground, and if you see nothing but blue, you're obviously climbing. And if they were in an updraft, the pilot monitoring, who's a PM, could look and say, oh, we're climbing, but he doesn't know on an Airbus. On a Boeing, he would see the yoke pulled back, but actually on an Airbus, the side stick does not move on his side. And that's what's really odd about the Airbus.
And that's what Jeff mentioned in his article,
yes.
Is that literally this guy had he had frozen, and Jeff's is a writer who talks about the psychological effect of crisis situations and stuff on the human psyche and how we might react to those situations. And his guess is that the guy froze, and he froze with the stick all the way back. And by the time anybody realized what was going on, it was too late.
But yes, that's the likelihood. NTSB and their JAR, which is the Joint Aviations Regulations, Aviations Authorities too, they also call it JAA over in Europe, mm-hmm. Investigation, and also Brazil is involved in that. But in the United States and Canada, we don't have what we call ab initio training, which means in Latin, from the beginning. We go to flight school, we pay for that. No airline, United, Virgin, they don't pay me to go learn how to fly. Air France, Lufthansa, China Airlines, Korean, they actually pull German nationals, Korean nationals. If you're going to go fly for them, they'll pay for your ratings. So you get your ratings in a Cessna, and all of a sudden you're now flying a Boeing. And here in the U.S. and Canada, we actually go through different companies, and we are paying for that. And then once we're in an airline, we're getting paid, yes. But we're not following, per se, always these same procedures. We go company to company, has different procedures. And if you're one of those guys that has 300 hours and you now fly a Boeing, you really never have hand-flown a large jet.
So what I'm extrapolating from this is that pilots in the United States and Canada receive more crisis training because they're involved in more training situations on the way up. I'm guessing that if you're flying a Cessna, you don't have as many tools and things at your control as you do if you're flying an Airbus 320.
That too, but they're told from a... If they jump right into a Boeing, autopilot solves everything. It's just a tool that allows you situationally aware in your situation.
So, Henry, are these guys using autopilot too much? Is this an issue for the flying public? Should they be concerned about this?
No. I mean, we're still around worldwide. It's still very, very safe to fly, honestly. You're, like Tom was saying, you're more likely, the most dangerous part of your trip is driving to the airport.
Yeah.
Rushing because you're probably late. I always see it on coming on board. But the fact is that I always encourage, if I'm flying with a first officer that is new to the company, I always brief them. Hand fly as much as you want, autopilot on, autopilot off, auto thrust on, auto thrust off.
I would think that you would want to have an opportunity to hand fly the plane,
yeah,
in non-critical situations as often as possible so that when the time comes, you will know what to do.
And that's where you control your breathing. In the crisis situation, I'm sure Jeff Wise would talk about this. You're taking in too much air and you're not releasing any. So you basically start hyperventilating.
Mm-hmm.
And when you fly, you hand fly, you just have to control your breathing. In a crisis situation, it's control your breathing.
And this is part of your training.
Yes, yes. And I believe if you jump too quickly into a Boeing or a jet, a turbine engine, without getting all this hand flying skills down, receiving this, that could lead to a detriment, I believe. So the company ops may say 500 feet autopilot on. I know my friends that fly at Emirates, they turn the autopilot on quite quickly. Mm-hmm. And some of them that have hand flown large jets around the world, they're like, I don't like that. I want to hand fly. But some guys, I just flew with a guy recently that turned the autopilot on 1,000 feet. And I'm like, well, I let you fly the first two legs. I'm going to fly the last leg. If you'd have told me, excuse me, that you're going to autopilot on 1,000 feet, I would have taken them. I mean, because you're not flying the airplane. You're letting the autopilot do it all.
And there's some issue as to what your response time might be in a crisis situation. Henry, I really appreciate you coming on and talking about this because there are very few pilots who would be willing to be as open and as honest. And I think that whenever people get a better understanding of when a disaster like this happens, obviously it was a horrible situation, but you want to learn from it so it doesn't happen again. And also we want to emphasize to people that this was a one-off situation, that it's not the type of thing that happens every day.
Exactly. It's very safe to fly. And usually what happens in events is the chain links, of what we call it, begin to break. And certain things could have been from the briefing down to the weather. Certain things were escalating quickly. And that's what happens. And that's why we try to study these. And the NTSB makes a study of them.
And probably when the Air France final report comes out, or the aviation folks from France, why then that will be reflected. Henry, we need to wrap this up. When we last talked to you, you were about to take off on a trip to Africa. And I understand your father had some health problems and you haven't gone yet.
No, I haven't gone to West Africa, but I will. My dad's doing well. I'm sure he's listening.
Uh-huh.
As well
wonderful,
as my mother.
Wonderful.
Yes. They say
hello there. We love your son.
Hello to Henry's mom and dad.
They're smiling right now, I guarantee it. They are listening.
Well, I can't tell you what a resource it is for us, and I hope that some of what we talked about in the first half of the program, which was a little less serious and a little less technical, gave a little inspiration to some boy or girl who is out there thinking about being an airline pilot someday, because they could do well to emulate what you have done, Henry. Thank you again for coming in and spending some time with us.
Always a pleasure, and always feel free to contact me,
Thank you so much, Henry. And don't forget, go to travelguysradio.com. Also, you can find some information and details on Henry's book, which, how's the book doing, Henry?
It's the second edition, just came out about 3 months ago, and it has reviews on the back. It's doing very well.
No More Heroes. It's fiction, sort of.
Sort of, kind of. Yeah, it's kind of based. It's fiction based on Henry's travels. Anyway, yes, travelguysradio.com will get you a link not only to Henry's, but some other neat things that every week we've got some neat things on there to talk about. When we come back, we are going to talk about getting a great dinner at a great price in Sacramento this month. We are the Travel Guys. You're listening to FM News Talk 92.5 and AM 1530 KFBK.
You know, my bags are packed. I'm ready.
Your bags are packed and you're ready to roll?
I'm standing outside Henry's door. I hope he wakes up in time to get us there.
There's only the one. The problem, though, is there's the only one jump seat. Okay. There you go. There you go. Welcome back to the Travel Guys. We are Mark and Tom.
Tom,
yeah. We've only known each other for 3 decades. So, and we have with us Lisa Martinez. Lisa is with the Downtown Sacramento Partnership. There is something really cool going on in Sacramento. Well, obviously, it's not the weather that's really cool, because we're having record temperatures about every day. A perfect opportunity with no rain in the forecast to get out and enjoy some good grub in Sacramento. And Lisa is here to tell us about a special event that's going to take place in our city. Lisa?
Absolutely. Well, Dine Downtown is...
Oh, hold on just a second.
Hold on here. We got to get your...
We got you on the wrong... Is she there?
Hello, you guys.
There you go.
There we go. Okay.
And
that.
Go.
So Dine Downtown is Downtown Sacramento's Restaurant Week. It's taking place from starting on Monday and going through the 18th of January. It's your opportunity to try Downtown Sacramento's top restaurants. So we've got 30 restaurants that are offering 3-course prefix menus.
And we looked at the list here, and it's like it's all the big boys.
Yeah, it's the top dogs in town. So, yeah, it's amazing. We've got restaurants on like Ella and the Firehouse and 1022 and classic restaurants like Frank Fats, and some of the hotels are participating. It really is an opportunity I always say you could break your New Year's resolutions a little bit with us, but you really get a fantastic, fantastic dining experience.
Yeah, thanks, Lisa. Nice timing. I was ready my New Year's resolution to drop 15 pounds, and then you guys come along with this.
Yeah, but Thomas, listen here. You can look on this list, and lots of these restaurants are offering vegetarian options.
That's true.
And dare I say, there are even a few on here that might have something that's marginally healthy for you.
No. Lots of them do. I guarantee it. And it's 3 courses for $30, which can't beat. And what do we have, 30 restaurants participating?
We have 30 restaurants participating.
So, Lisa, how does this work now? Is this a walk-in thing, or do you have to have reservations, or it's either-or, or how
coupon,
do folks?
Yeah, so it's pretty simple. You can walk in any restaurant for those 10 days Dine Downtown is going on and ask for the Dine Downtown menu, and it'll be a prefix menu, and you can order right off of that. Or if you're feeling adventurous, you could order off that menu, but the $30 price is for that prefix menu. We recommend that you do reservations in advance, mainly because it books up. Even on a Monday, Tuesday night, you'll find that these restaurants are really busy, and we found that it's a great opportunity for people to try out the restaurants. But on the business side of things with those restaurants, it really gives them a big boost in the beginning of January, where it's typically a slow month in the industry.
Now, excuse my ignorance, but is this the first time this type of event has been held in Sacramento?
Actually, it's been going on for quite some time now. It'll be our seventh year this year in Sacramento having this restaurant week.
And this has been, I go to New York quite often, and they kind of modeled this a number of years ago, and it's been quite successful. Many other cities have, New York does it with its theater, and it does it with the restaurants, and they've expanded it. It used to be a week, now it's a month. So it really has proven to be a way to put people in seats that would otherwise perhaps go empty.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, we started off with 7 days about 6 years ago with Dine Downtown. We expanded out to 10 days just because the market and the restaurants really enjoyed it. It's also part of California Restaurant Month's Restaurant Week as well. So all around the state of California, you'll find restaurant months going on, or restaurant weeks just like this one. So Sacramento Dine Downtown is that official event for this market. And when we're looking at the market itself, you know, we found that it's been a great revenue generator for those businesses. And we estimate about last year in 2011 when we did this event for 10 days, those restaurants with restaurant sales and parking revenue, that generated about $1.3 million in revenue.
Wow, so it really did create quite a boost for the local economy, especially at a time, not only can the local economy use a boost, but especially in January if you owned a restaurant. Thomas?
Yes, I wanted to make sure, because it went by rather quickly. Each restaurant has specific items that are on their menu for the three course for 30. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
So you know, you be aware that you're not going to be able to go and just order anything on the menu random. There are certain things. And where would people go to get a chance to take a look at each one of these menus to as they get ready to choose from the 30 different restaurants?
Well, I'd recommend you hit up our website. It's downtownsac.org/dinedowntown. It'll get you directly to the list of all 30 restaurants that are participating. You could take a look and download each of those menus, and I recommend studying them first because it'll let you know. If you're on the paleo diet, which is really, really popular right now, you'll find some restaurants that are following that. There's vegan options, and then for those carnivores like me, there's plenty of options for us. So take a look at the menus beforehand. You could also make your reservations online through OpenTable straight from that website, so you don't even have to bother picking up the phone. You could do it in a couple of quick clips. And then also on our blog on downtownsac.org, you'll find previews of the menus that we're doing right now, so you'll have a chance before you even get to the restaurant to take a peek of what it looks like and what people are experiencing in these restaurants.
Ah, and all of those websites were all rattled off to you. If you just remember travelguysradio.com,
travelguysradio.com.
You can go there and you will find all of these links to all of that information and a list of all of the restaurants, including the ones that have vegetarian options and all of those things. Lisa, this is really wonderful, and I'm sorry that we haven't had you on before, but you can bet that we will have you back at again this time next year. Perhaps this will become a 3 or 4 week event at some point in time.
You'd love to see that.
Only if you show up with food, though, and some samples from each of the restaurants. actually, I'm sure that Kitty O'Neill on Fridays will be marching through all the local restaurants to talk about this.
Oh, I'm sure you're going to hear more about this during the week, but we thought that since we are the travel and entertainment guys and our folks are always looking for a good deal around town, and this is indeed a good deal around town. So thank you very much, Lisa, for coming in and sharing a little bit with us about Dine Downtown.
Thanks, guys.
All right.
Notice that all the Perigary's restaurants are there. Randy didn't miss a step here. He's got them all there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Cafeteria 15L. It's actually Cafeteria 15L. I think it was 15L for a brief moment until they put one out in the new Terminal B.
Uh-huh.
And that's not really at 15L.
Speaking of the new Terminal B, you know, I mean, the food selections at the airport, it's just like night and day. We've gone from being able to have nothing many of the carriers to having all of these wonderful choices. Tom, I had a burger at the airport the other day that was really was about $8, and I would have paid $8 for it just about anywhere in town. I mean, it was something that I would make a note next time to go to the airport a little bit early so I'd have time to eat.
Want to thank Henry Bernacki for coming in again to be on the show with us. We'll look forward to having him back again. And Mark, next week?
Next week we're going to have Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And next week we're going to throw out a couple questions for our listeners, have some fun. It's the winter time, so I thought we would have a chilly weekend next Sunday. We're going to give away away four Chili's gift card, dining gift cards.
Outstanding. So, and be sure to visit TravelGuysRadio.com and take a look there at what's coming up in the near future if you want to be a big winner of a big trip.
Absolutely. And that's right. We're going to have the Mystery Spot contest coming back to the Travel Guys next month. You can go to TravelGuysRadio.com and get registered for that. Have a chance to win a trip to New York or Hawaii. I'm Mark Hoffman. He's Tom Romano. We are the Travel Guys. An hour a week is all we ask. We'll see you next Sunday at 2 o'clock.